fit. First, this is an older map, but it's still fairly accurate. This is the commercial zoning within the city of Harker Heights, and as you can see, the zoning is following our corridors. The commercial zoning exists along the three major corridors in the city, Veterans Memorial Boulevard, US 190, and 2410. So that's what when we initially did the Knights Way Overlay District, we first started doing an analysis of the entire city and started to characterize different areas of the city and breaking it down into districts. And the first district that we decided to tackle was the Knights Way, the 2410 corridor, because that was our high growth corridor. That was where we were going to start seeing the majority of growth in the city heading eastward, and especially with the emplacement of the sewer line that we have out east of Warriors Path, we're going to start seeing that start to develop. But now that we've looked to the future, so to speak, we now need to start looking at kind of the far future, being the redevelopment opportunities within the city. And so we think that Veterans Memorial is the next logical choice in that. There are some vacant lots in that stretch that could be developed, but we're also looking at the redevelopment opportunities that go along with that corridor. So looking more in depth at Veterans Memorial Boulevard, you see that the vast majority of the property is commercial. There's some retail, but for the most part, it's commercial. Commercial being things like auto shops, auto repair, clubs, that kind of thing. There are some city facilities nearby. We have the water tower out there in the street yard. And there are some we define the corridor. You all right, Ty?
Absolutely.
Okay. We define the corridor as mostly the contiguous lots of veterans, but we did stretch it out a little bit. And so because of that, you do see that there are some residential tracts within that corridor. And so a lot of that needs to be addressed and updated as far as our survey of the existing conditions. But I just wanted to give you a basic breakdown that veterans, for the most part, as we all know, is commercial. This is the breakdown of that commercial use within veterans, or of the land use. You can see the vast majority is commercial and retail, a little bit of single family, a little bit of public, semi-public space, and some drainage, but there are some vacant tracts as well. So going a little bit farther back in time, I just wanted to bring up the comprehensive plan to show that, one, we need to update this document, but two, even back in 2007 when they developed the comprehensive plan, they were talking about redeveloping Veterans Memorial Boulevard. So this has been on the radar for quite a long time, and I think that the time is right to really start looking at that. You can see that the first thing that they want to do is continue in the visioning process for that corridor, update the comprehensive plan and the land use map. That being said, I pulled out some key terms from the comprehensive plan. First, saying many of the commercial areas within the city will develop in the next 10 to 20 years. It's a little bit obvious. Areas that have seen growth since the 80s will start to see redevelopment options appear as we start to run out of undeveloped land, and then the major residential growth is going to be continued to be confined to the south and southeastern areas of the city. Again, things that they predicted in 2007, almost 10 years later, is essentially happening. So I wanted to kind of show you that and show that we as a city are limited in our size. We have, as the result of lawsuits, we have an established extraterritorial jurisdiction that cannot grow beyond its current bounds. So we're eventually, through annexation, going to fill that area, but we won't grow beyond that area. And then within the areas that we do have to develop, you know, we are Harker Heights, the Heights being the ridge on the southern side of the city, that's going to significantly limit the development potential as well. So this map is here to just kind of show you that, yeah, we're eventually going to run out of land, and we're going to have to start infilling if we want to continue to grow. So the golf course concept plan, the idea of going back and filling in a lot of these vacant lots, is going to start becoming the norm, not the exception. So we're going to start seeing a lot of the battles that we're seeing with that. The citizens are going to have to deal with the fact that a lot of these vacant tracts are going to start to develop in the city, and it's kind of a you know, the result of our own success. People want to be here because of the high quality of life we have, and so that's going to drive the development to continue in this area. And, you know, they talk of what's called the Texas Triangle, which is basically the area of land between Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. That is one of the fastest growing areas in the entire country. That area has produced the top growing city in the country at least four times in the last 10 years. So we're smack dab in the middle of all of that. And so that's one of the growing pains of that, is we're going to start to see some infill development as we move on. So going back to the comprehensive plan, even back then, citizens have expressed interest in improving the city, the older areas in particular, Veterans Memorial Boulevard. Even back then, they talked about visualizing attractive landscape roadways with pleasant places to walk and successful retail. They talked about screening and landscaping that should be encouraged, perimeter landscaping and screening of parking facilities to reduce the negative impact. Things that we actually put in place in the Knights Way Overlay District are things that they were talking about throughout the entire city. And finally, improving infrastructure, continuing to improve safety, appearance, building facades, eliminating sign clutter, so forth. So those have been the goals since, you know, well before 2007, but definitely enumerated in our comprehensive plan as things that we should be striving for. So I just want to talk a little bit about Veterans Memorial Boulevard now. The development standards that we've historically followed have been the traditional commercial development patterns you've seen throughout the entire country. You put all your parking in the front, you have massive signs fronting the roads. This was a highway, so these were highway standards at the time, but it's no longer the highway. So a lot of times the typical first step in redeveloping a scenario like this is what's called the public involvement, is having the city kind of go in and help clean up the area. And so one of the things we did to visualize that was create, you know, a visualization of what that might look like. So the easiest thing to do for the city, well, I say easiest, it's not quite easy, would be to, you know, curb and gutter and sidewalks, which starts to transform the landscape of the area quite literally. Another idea we've talked about is the idea of vegetative medians to kind of break up the highway effect that this original street had as a design and start to turn it into a boulevard. And with the idea being that with city participation, you start to see some private participation, you know, as the streetscape improves, the quality of the commercial property will also improve, so that hopefully in the future we end up with something that looks more like what we probably want it to look like than the highway industrial area that we have right now. So that's what we're here today to talk about, is an overlay district being probably one of the easier tools that we can implement to start directing the growth of Veterans Memorial Boulevard. And so what is that going to look like? These are the things that I want to have as a discussion with you. So feel free to interrupt me at any time, but I kind of want to go through this and then we'll just have basically an open discussion. And if we were not in this situation, we'd just be sitting at a table and talking. But for now, I guess I get to lecture you. But basically, one of the things we talked about as a city staff that we want to present to you is the idea of what planners call a road diet. And that's where you start to redesign the streets to the more correct usage for those streets. So in other words, V&B was put together as a highway. So you've got five lanes of travel, a center lane and two lanes in each direction. They're very wide lanes. As we kind of discussed off the record beforehand, people drive the design speed on a street. They don't pay attention to the street signs. They don't pay attention to the speed limit. They're going to drive at what they feel comfortable with. And if you don't believe me, get on I-35, get on US 130, and drive 30 miles an hour. You physically will not be able to. You will feel uncomfortable. There are very real studies that show that there is a psychological impact to how a street is contained and to how fast you drive and how comfortable you feel within that environment. And so humans don't feel comfortable in a wide open space like that. We want to just move. And plus, you feel like at that speed you're going to get rear-ended by somebody traveling at the correct speed limit. So again, design speed is a very important facet of road design. So the idea of a road diet is taking these super wide roads with multiple lanes and shrinking them down into something that usually presents as a more multimodal, meaning more means of travel than just cars, and allowing more utility for those streets. So that's what we're talked about, is reducing the lanes, adding multimodal lanes, adding on-street parking, that kind of thing, to kind of reduce the footprint of the drivable aspect of the road. Next would be improved streetscape requirements. This would be what we call the semi-public realm, or basically what you can see from the street. So that includes the part of the right-of-way that's not the street, but it also includes the frontages of the buildings, the fronts of the buildings, the parking, and so forth. Some of the ideas that we've talked about are increasing the front facade requirements, but simultaneously decreasing the side and rear facade requirements, because we want to encourage infill development, and that's a lot easier to do when it's not so strict a standard for requirements. We want to see increased front landscaping requirements, and then conversely, we want to see decreased side and rear landscaping requirements, except in situations where we need screening between uses. So when you've got a residential and a commercial use, you do want to see some decent screening. Next, we're looking at improved commercial residential screening, like I kind of mentioned before, the idea of walls, buffers. Buffers really don't work in the VMB scenario because we really don't have enough land for that. The lots aren't deep enough to allow for, you know, a 20 or 30 foot buffer before you start with building. Most of these places are built right up to the property line. Their parking goes all the way to the back fence, which abuts the backyard of residential zones. And finally, signage, and this is the big clash that we'll have, particularly between the city and the businesses, is the idea of reducing signage, reducing the frequency of the large signs, and maybe reducing the heights of the other signs, but finding some kind of balance. Again, the idea, and this comes from the actual sign companies, the National Sign Code Association or whatever that is, you know, the idea with signs is to get somebody's attention, but there is science behind how high a sign needs to be, how big the font needs to be, and how offset from the road the sign needs to be in comparison to how fast you're driving on the road and how many lanes of travel there are. You know, on US 190, when the speed limits are 70, 75 miles an hour, yeah, you need 50-foot signs with, you know, foot-high text on those signs to be visible, because you need to have at least a mile, well, not that far, but at least a half a mile, a quarter mile, to be able to exit and go to McDonald's or do what you need to do. On a 40-mile-an-hour road, you don't need those same requirements. But the people that are demanding signage are still basing it on those kind of standards. And so it's an educational idea of what is the appropriate sign for that particular thing. And then finally, we want to talk about any other ideas you guys might have as far as what would be a good overlay requirement for Veterans Memorial Boulevard. So I talked about road diets. It's kind of the idea that I'm talking about. Yes, sir.
Workshop right now, which you're welcome to stay. It's no problem. The regular PNZ meeting won't start until 6:30. The Oak Ridge proposed subdivision out there has been taken off the agenda for tonight. So if that is, you know, the only reason that you're here, I just wanted to let y'all know that it won't even be discussed tonight, other than to say that it's no longer on the agenda for tonight. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure y'all knew that. If that was the only reason you were here, you know, just wanted to let y'all know. But you're welcome to stay and everything. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to elaborate on that, we are actually discussing the idea of redeveloping the north side of town, and specifically concepts for beautifying and improving Veterans Memorial Boulevard. And so we certainly welcome public participation and input on this. So towards the end of the presentation, if anybody wants to speak on that, we're happy to hear ideas from everybody, the Planning Zoning Commission, city staff, and citizens. So what I'm talking about now is basically putting Veterans Memorial Boulevard on a diet, meaning that right now we've got two lanes in each direction in a center lane, and there are other alternatives that could fit in that same amount of space to help ease some traffic congestion. Believe it or not, you can actually ease congestion by reducing lanes because you provide a smoother flow of traffic and reduce people needlessly changing lanes. And then you can also have offset turning lanes to turn right and left, or mostly to turn right since you have a center turning lane. But that actually helps with what's called the laminar flow or the straight flow of traffic. So the idea you see here is in the same space as your standard four-lane divided road with a turn lane in the middle. You can have a turn lane with slightly narrower lanes and then have on-street parking, have bike lanes. This would be another good location to put bus stops, and they can actually pull off the road to load and unload passengers and so forth. So this is the concept of the road diet. That's what it kind of looks like. And the big trick to all of this is that Veterans Memorial Boulevard is actually a TxDOT road. It's not a City of Harker Heights road. So if we do something like this, odds are TxDOT will work with us on it. And I've got a good feeling that they'd let us do it. But of course, they're going to let us pay for it. They're not going to pay for it. But at the same time, paint is pretty cheap. You know, if we start talking about the landscape medians and so forth, that gets really, really pricey. I, for one, would personally rather put that money into sidewalks and proper storm sewer. But again, paint is real cheap, and it's something that we can do to pilot, and it's something that we are going to actually attempt to pilot in the not-so-distant future. Surprise, Mark. I want to look at Verna Lee as a potential pilot. I've already talked to Mark about that. I'm just teasing him. For something like that, Verna Lee is another one that the design speed on that road is pretty high, and despite the fact that we've lowered it, people still drive really fast on the road, and this is one of the alternatives, is to restripe it to affect some behavior change. And again, that's what we're talking about for Veterans Memorial Boulevard. As far as streetscape is concerned, these are the kind of the concepts that I had in mind when looking at it. Both of these are metal buildings, and I think they both look fantastic. The picture on the top left has a masonry and wood kind of accents in the front, but they're completely metal on the sides and the back, and then they've got some landscaping, which when those trees finally grow, is going to look pretty good. And so, you know, the difference between Veterans Memorial and the Knights Way Overlay District is because we do not have a downtown in Harker Heights, we've kind of chosen 2410 Knights Way to be our showcase boulevard. That's kind of our downtown type area. So we want our showcase businesses, we want our Class A retail and commercial to go there and to look really good. I'm not saying we don't want things to look really good in Veterans, but Veterans is where we want to encourage the ma and pop or the small businesses to start really growing, and those places can't afford to do 100% masonry, and frankly, there are scenarios where it's not practical to do 100% masonry. The Texas Tumblers rock wall place would be incredibly expensive to coat that in masonry, and it would be kind of pointless to do so. So we want to encourage that kind of development. I noticed we don't have any batting cages or any indoor batting cages in this region, and now that I'm playing softball, I'm like, we need something like that in this area. Again, we couldn't do that in the City of Harker Heights right now because we don't allow metal construction in any parts of the city. So an overlay district on Veterans would not only allow but encourage metal buildings, which will open up a lot of possibilities and make that part of town more attractive to businesses that want to come in and don't want to do or can't do masonry facades. The building on the bottom right is all metal. There are no, I think there's a wainscoting on the corner, but they've also got those incredibly large canopies for shade, which again breaks up the metal building, makes it look fantastic without having to do the really expensive facade work that we see in the Knights Way Overlay District. So these are the kinds of things that we're envisioning for the streetscape, you know, as landscaping-wise and facade-wise on Veterans. Next is the commercial and residential screening. As you know, in the Knights Way Overlay District, we require masonry walls to separate the commercial and the residential use. And as I alluded to before, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the lots are so shallow and you're going from one extreme use to the other that you need an extreme measure to keep light and sound from spilling over from the commercial to the residential. You're dealing with lots that are 100 to 150 feet deep, and then you're dealing with lots that are zone B4, which are our second highest commercial zoning possible, going up against an R1, single family residential, which is our most least intensive zoning district in the city. So you're going from one of the most intense to one of the most unintense in the space of 150 feet. And so that's the idea of why we required masonry walls separating those. But some of your predecessor members on the P&Z did some research and noticed that there are other ways to achieve sound blocking without a masonry wall. So what you see here are some products. The top left photo is a product that you can attach to a chain link fence that absorbs a certain amount of sound. I don't know if I believe their claims per se, but you know it does have some. It does merit us maybe trying to pilot it or looking at it. The top right shows some sound dampening with some screening around the equipment. So the air conditioning unit's got sound dampening and a fence around it to minimize the noise there. Neither of those are masonry techniques, and they can provide some dampening. And then the image on the bottom just kind of shows what kind of decibel level savings you get by installing different materials to dampen sound. The point being that if we do some kind of sound screening between residential and commercial uses in a V&B overlay district, I'd like to try something different and not necessarily just require masonry walls across the board. I'd like to have some language in there that says a masonry wall or other approved material that will dampen sound to normal limits when crossing the property line. Give the business owners and the developers a chance to be innovative. And if they can do the same job with some well-placed shrubs, trees, and this material instead of a foot-thick masonry wall, then more power to them. I think that's something that we should encourage. And if this works here, we may have to go back and revisit that portion of the Knights Way Overlay District for the same thing. Finally, signage. I really don't have an idea of what I think we should do, but I definitely have an idea of what we shouldn't do. And that's kind of what I'm showing here in this picture. The top left one is in Colorado, obviously, and it's really hard to notice the really beautiful mountains back there with that clutter of signage. And again, we are Harker Heights, and we have some heights, and that's one of the things that we'd like to prevent from happening, and that's why the sign restrictions on the Knights Way Overlay District are so strict, because that is a direct view shed to the hills, to the ridges, to the south. V&B, not so critical per se, except that we just, that kind of clutter just doesn't work, because basically when everybody has a loud sign like that, then you don't see any of the signs. I mean, my brain has a hard time picking out the specific brands and companies, because I just have over time have learned to just kind of ignore all of that. So, you know, it's the same thing. If everybody's screaming, then nobody's screaming. If everything's an emergency, then nothing's an emergency, and you just tune it out. So, and that's kind of what the bottom right-hand photo is showing, is not only do we tend to tune things out, but if everybody has a gigantic sign at the same height, then everybody's sign gets covered up, and it defeats the purpose of having signs. And again, I'll be the first to tell you, we need signs. You have to have signs. You have to know where places are and how to get to them. But there's the right way to do it and there's the wrong way to do it. And I'm not saying I know the right way by this sign. I'm just saying that there are some guidelines that we can look at, you know, from sign manufacturers about optimal placement, optimal separation, optimal color, height, negative space. They get into a lot of detail from the National Sign Council on their criteria. And there are things that I think that we can scientifically and logically just do to encourage the right kind of signage. And then finally, other ideas, things that I think we need to talk about. Most of this is focusing again on the semi-public or public space. You can see on the top left that they've used planters to kind of break up the street from the sidewalk. My favorite is actually the bottom left, where they've developed that lattice work to provide shade. You know, I go to planning conferences, your planners behind me go to planning conferences, and that's what we always talk about, is what's called urban walkability. We want people to be able to walk from place to place. You want stores close together, you want schools and residences all close together, so that we can eliminate traffic, we can eliminate congestion, we can eliminate pollution, and get people healthy again, right? That's really, really awesome, especially when those are coming from schools and studies in Oregon or New York, where it doesn't get to 120 degree heat index in the summer. So I like to see, you know, so I'm more pragmatic. I want to walk, but I'm not going to go out there and, you know, I can't walk to work when I have to dress like this and then I look like I ran a marathon just across the street. So, you know, looking at different things like that covered walkway are some things that I'd really like to look at. You know, how feasible is that? What does that kind of thing cost? I don't know if we can require it of the businesses, but can we partner with them and do that? You know, or will all that stuff just die when the heat gets to it? So things that we need to look at. But I think that's a, I'm sorry? Yeah, and that's where it's going to be. I could see where we have the businesses install it, but then we assume it like we would any other infrastructure, like we do the water and the sewer and the sidewalks, and then we have to maintain it, and that just has to be a sacrifice we're willing to make as a city to maintain some kind of walking walkability. And let's be honest, something like that might help to channel all of the less sober people on Veterans Memorial that might be walking around. So, you know, who knows? I also like the one in the middle. That's a rain garden. We don't get enough rain here that often to sustain that, but that's a really interesting concept. Is you collect all the rainwater and you use it to water plants that are awesome plants because they can go long periods between rain, but then they can deal with being flooded for a few days at a time even. So those are some very strategically chosen plants and some engineered soils that can handle all of that. And what you don't see in that is there are actual storm drains underneath that. So if they reach a certain level, then the storm drains will take over so you don't just flood out those little areas. But the overlay district has been designed to encourage rain gardens, and nobody has tried that yet. So I hope that's something to move forward. And last but not least, my other favorite is, of course, street art, architecture. That's a cool dinosaur sculpture. I think things like that give character to an area. Dinosaur probably not appropriate for here, but you know, my kid would be all over that thing. But again, just other things that we can think about. And other cities do actually have requirements for street art, for architectural features above and beyond the building facade. So it's not unheard of. You know, anything new is of course going to get some feedback, but things like that are actually pretty easy and pretty inexpensive to do, but have a decent impact. So anyway, that concludes my presentation. And so I'm going to go sit down now, and I think we should just have a talk about all the stuff I just brought up. If I need to go back to specific slides, please let me know. But we're here to get your input on and ideas on how we can start with an overlay district for Veterans Memorial Boulevard. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. we've talked about the I guess in the last 6 or 7 years that I've been on the commission. You know, it's been brought up, you know, a few times, and it seems to me like it's a we always get back to the chicken or the egg. You know, which comes first? You know, what's going to drive, you know, more traffic or development, you know, down there? Is it going to be, like you said, you know, the city getting, you know, doing some investment down there first? You know, and of course, like you said, with TxDOT approval, and there won't be any money coming from TxDOT. You know, we know that. You know, they're pretty much, you know, broke as it is. So,
well, Joseph, if that's TxDOT, is there a possibility of getting some federal money? Get them to help us do a grant or something for.
People don't even know where the boundary is.
Those are far offset at the end of the town.
Yeah, that's part of the problem is that I guess the way TechDOT has determined the boundaries go is when both sides of the road match. So there already is a sign.
That particular part, that would be to our advantage because it would be past that shopping center where Babes is.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking.
Well, who put in that masonry, that beautiful masonry sign since Harker Heights?
The city and I believe the chamber made them that market did that, the one on the highway that you can hit.
The city did.
Odd requirements in that overlay area would definitely help, because there's a lot of businesses, just like the one you showed us that had the awnings out over there. If they didn't have that, spend that money trying to put brick and facades out there, they could use that money to put nice awnings out and make I don't see anything wrong with metal buildings. I think that nowadays with the abundance of colors and designs, that, you know, just because it says it's a metal building, it doesn't, you know, they're very good looking buildings. They're, you know.
And that's exactly right. I think that when that ordinance was amended to exclude metal buildings, we were dealing with people just wanting to put corrugated tin on the sides of the building and call it a day.
talking about those kind of basically portable buildings that you have to restrict it by square footage, and that will be detrimental for somebody trying to take a Connex building and moving it on a lot and turning it into their business. I think that you know, if it's going to be for storage and it's in the back of the lot where it can be screened a little bit, then you know, I don't see a problem with that. But the main building has to be restricted in square footage to discourage the moving in of a Connex box.
So a minimum square footage allowed.
Yeah.
How big are those? They start out at about 8 foot wide and 20 feet long and go up to...
That's only...
Without getting a permit and all that, because I can just see all these people coming and bringing in Connex boxes and dropping them in their parking lot.
Well, they already do that.
I mean, Molly World already does it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but at least they're on wheels most of the time.
But we have a
but
time.
My point
time
is, a permit, you know, like in your backyard or whatever, you're only allowed so many square feet for a storage building before you have to get a permit.
There, it's up to 144 square feet before you have to, you know.
So that keeps...
You still have to get a permit for it. But,
right, you know. But it's not the go-around that...
No,
and not larger building. Well, that's what I'm saying. If we keep that, so we're not end up with Connex boxes in every, you know,
and I think
every
if it's
backyard,
just part of
every...
the part of the overlay on Veterans Memorial Boulevard. You're not going to have to worry about that in residential areas because it wouldn't apply.
I kind of view it that could be a very unique section of our city all by itself. I mean, I think we have to kind of envision where we want to go with it and what kind of personality or style we want to give that. I mean, it's never going to be a Georgetown. It's never going to be some other places that give you a unique and different feel for being there. But it could be all its own. If it's going to have a lot of metal containers and if it's very industrial or industrial commercial, I mean, to me, we could develop a feel for that area that might even be quirky, but something like with some industrial art, with adding the trees like I see in some of the pictures. I mean, it could develop a personality of its own. It's unique from any other part of the city. And I mean, to me, we can capitalize on the kind of buildings and the kind of businesses that are there to try to create its own feel, but to have it looking good, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna bring it. I think that even though it's more expensive, you need to go the route.
lessen the requirement of size, so they can either put the awnings out or even do landscaping. Because they don't have to spend any money putting brick on the front of the building and do all this. Maybe they can buy a couple of trees to put out there or create a planting area or something. The second one is, and then is upkeep. You know, it's nice they put all these trees in there and they put it all in, and 3 months later it's a dead tree because nobody watered it and the plants are all dead. Or even like the original requirement on one of the clubs downtown was that they build planters and put trees in. Well, after a couple of years, they just went away. And nobody's ever said, hey, what the hell happened to this? Put it back out there. Yeah. But same thing there. There was no way to water them. You know, the own place said, I got to hire somebody to come in the morning and drag hoses all the way out there to try and water this stuff. He said, it just doesn't work out. And I said,
yeah, it's just... Yeah, you know, that's the.
It's not get started on the Colleen Blow.
Yeah, and that's the whole problem I've always had with this kind of a concept is it's the maintenance aspect of it. You know, city's got to be cognizant of that. You know, our taxes are getting high enough as it is on homeowners. You know, and when you go to just it's what do they call it, mission creep? You know, the more. The more requirements you have, you know, that the city's going to have to maintain in the future, that just keeps growing your city budgets, and you know that can be huge, you know, down the road, and you know, homeowners out there, you know, tax rate didn't go down, so.
If you make it nice enough, you're going to get more businesses in there. You're going to get some more tax dollars that you can use.
Well, yeah, hopefully. Hopefully you will.
Go that direction.
Does the city own any land over there?
I mean, you can make it as pretty as you put a lot of trees and stuff down there. You still got tattoo parlors and bars.
Oh, I realize.
You know, and
you
got
Lord.
You got automotive shops down there with
experience.
But there's 40 cars out there, you know, that are, you know, parked right out, you know. It's all parked right around, you know, right off the street where, I mean, it just looks junky. If we're gonna beautify it, I mean, there's going to have to be, you know, we're going to have to try to get some of them, you know, some of the things down there changed now, you know, that, and I don't know how we do that when you have ongoing businesses down there, you know, with they're complying with current regulations and it's going to be hard to do.
Since you brought that up, I have been discussing with the city manager the idea of the city, and this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about last, was the idea of the city maybe providing grants for existing businesses to go redo their facades and their signage. Do you think that they'd bite on that? They would do that?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, whether it's, you know, a tax abatement or, you know, if we could work with the county, you know, where, you know, it could be, you know, the city. If we could work with the city, the school district, and the county, you know, all three especially, because, you know, the school tax is the biggest tax. And you know, then the city and then the county. So, yeah, if we could get something, you know, going along those lines, I'm sure business owners, they would at least hear. They wouldn't turn a deaf ear like they normally do.
Right.
You know, when you tell them, hey, you need to clean things up or spruce things up, you know, they just, you know, they say, well, you know, I've got so much money coming in, I've got so much going out, I can't afford to do anymore. You know, so
okay.
That's a good idea.
And identify our target and be real about it. You know, we're not going to get restaurants up there. You're not going to get McDonald's to build on a corner up there. We need to go after, us, you know what our target audience is or our market is up there, and now go after that to get it started.
Right.
What kind of place is it going to be?
Build an industrial park where people will rent small offices, small warehouses, whatever. The more people they get, and that's when other businesses come.
Okay.
You have to get the numbers up.
Okay. Is there anybody in the audience that wants to talk about that? That's.
Thank you.
Well, the reason I say that is, for a prime example to me is I drive from here to Lyon Passes all the time, and this brand new highway they just built through Killeen, three lanes, all the concrete walls and everything else, and you drive it, and there's roots and grass growing out of all those walls. You go, so who does the maintenance on this?
Right.
You know?
You know, like I said before, this is definitely something where we as the city have to make a stand. We have to agree that we're going to invest in the long-term success of that, and that means money. That means maintaining our end of it. And we shouldn't expect the businesses to do something that we're not willing to do. Good points, and he actually brings up something that I left out of this presentation. It's one of my personal favorites, is having mixed-use development. Is that something that you guys would want to have allowed here? So, you know, I always like to envision, you know, commercial on the bottom floor and then residential, you know, above it kind of thing, and I've pushed for that, and I don't know if there's really a market for that in this region, but I certainly don't see how it would hurt to include the option to do that in this area, if that's something that you guys think we should pursue. I don't think it hurts.
I wouldn't see why it would be a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean.
Then definitely, that's one of my favorite things to do. I'm sorry?
Is that allowed in the current overlay
of
2410?
No, it's not.
See, that's where it would start.
And that's something
we need to. It would be somewhere on Stillhouse Road from, you know, from the Tuscany Meadows somewhere back up this
right
in right the corner back where all the growth is.
And the idea is I need to go back and look and actually speak with the city attorney because the overlay district is not affecting use. It's only affecting design standards. So we may not have as the ability in an overlay district, and I just need to confirm this, to affect use. And that may be why we didn't try that in the 2410 overlay district. Because if you'll notice, or if you'll remember, the 2410 overlay district doesn't care about what you're doing on that property. It doesn't affect zoning per se. It only affects the parts of the zoning like the setbacks and the facade requirements. But those facade requirements are across the board, whether or not you're a fat rendering plant or a bakery. You know, it's the same facade requirement. What we're talking about here with the mixed use, and again, I'm willing to look into it. I would like to look into it, is the ability to actually say the overlay district on Veterans also allows mixed use development. Now, do we want to allow wholly residential? So in other words, let's say somebody wants to put an apartment complex in there. Should we make them rezone, or should they be allowed to do that by right? Or does it have to have a commercial component for that to count? And then anything that's 100% residential, they have to rezone. What do you guys think about that?
You're trying to develop that area
So just allow mixed residential period. Right next to an auto shop? No problem? Okay. That's, like I said, as a planner with the walkable urbanism, that's the kind of thing we actually, you know, are trying to encourage.
Then you're going to draw a couple of restaurants in that area because people want to be able to walk in restaurants.
Right.
Then they can get a car and drive across town.
Right, and I think ultimately the market's going to decide whether or not it's a good idea or not, I mean, but I'd rather give them the ability to do it than to just immediately be the no guy and say, no, you can't do it simply because this book says no without any really good reason. So, okay, that's something we'll look into.
The mixed use, if you look at other places where they've done the commercial downstairs and the condos up above, it always seems like the condos start to fill up with people and then immediately the small businesses, the bakeries, the coffee shops, the barber shops, that kind of thing, starts to infill, you know. At the residences first.
Jim Wright tried that on Clear Creek and it wasn't embraced very well so far. It's just taken a long time.
I've been there and it's not
rented. It took 2 years to get a handful of tenants in the building.
To be perfectly honest, it's not designed the way it's supposed to be designed though. So it's one of those things where there's a checklist of things that you need to do, and that checklist was followed. But as anybody that's tried to bake knows, I mean, just because you follow the instructions, there's some art behind it too. It's not all just a science.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I think failed in that particular development. I've been to that site, and yeah, I have my checklist, and yes, he did this, yes, he did that. You know, he followed all these things, but it just wasn't assembled the way that it could have been done. It could have been done better. That's not to say that it wouldn't have failed had he done it that way, but it's just hard to use that as a litmus test in this region. But, all right, I see we're running low on time, so I'm gonna take all these to heart, and then next meeting we'll probably do the golf course, but we'll try to touch back on this as well. And Mr. Johns, I apologize, but the golf course got tabled this evening. So we enjoy your company, though.
Just curious why the crowd wasn't here.
Right.
You need something to do in the spare time anyway.
Okay. Then we'll close the workshop at 6:37.
Is there an open issue? Can I ask a question?
On the workshop?
On the workshop?